any African American in this society that sees significant success has an added burden. And a lot of times America is very quick to embrace a Michael Jordan or an Oprah Winfrey or a Barack Obama, so long as you don't get too controversial around broader issues of social justice.
That was former President Barack Obama on last night's episode of The Last Dance, addressing the challenge that Michael Jordan faced in navigating both his fame and the expectations that he delve into issues of race and politics. It's an area where Jordan has been subject to intense criticism, and one where his approach has evolved in recent years. Today, the undefeated Jesse Washington joins us to discuss Jordan's activism, or lack thereof, and his true impact off the court. I'm Mina Kimes. It's Monday, May 4th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by Marathon.
Hey, Zach, can you go downstairs and do whatever you're doing? This is the first time in the whole pandemic I'm going to say, go play some video games.
I've been told the whole time, turn the game off.
Jesse Washington is a senior writer for The Undefeated. Jesse, last night's episode of The Last Dance looked at how Michael Jordan has handled or not handled social and political issues. There's a lot of ground to cover there. But you approached the subject by taking a deeper look at a quote that is examined in the episode. Can you remind people what that is?
Republicans buy sneakers too. The most infamous quote that Jordan ever said.
When did you hear it for the first time?
I first heard it in the mid-1990s because as a Black man in America and a journalist and a sports fan, it was something that we talked about. And it was something that we debated in the barbershop. It was something that we talked about around the dinner table amongst our family. Did Jordan say it? What did it mean? Was it right? Was he forsaking us? Was he leaving us to struggle by ourselves? It was definitely a topic for people who thought in any way about race and sports and Black upliftment.
So how did the quote first enter the public domain?
In 1990, there was a contentious Senate race in North Carolina, and it pitted a Black challenger, Harvey Gantt, who is the former mayor of Charlotte, against the Republican incumbent, Jesse Helms. Now, Jesse Helms was notorious for a lot of racist statements and actions, ranging from, but not limited to, singing Dixie to the first Black woman senator in a Senate elevator. Jesse Helms also called the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which he voted against, the single most dangerous piece of legislation that has ever been introduced in this Congress. Now, mind you, this is the piece of legislation that gave Black people equal rights under the law. So Jordan was asked to endorse Jesse Helms' opponent, Harvey Gantt, and he declined. And he was reported to have said, by way of explanation, Republicans buy sneakers too. The classic Michael Jordan zinger, quote, verbal jab, but it really ended up haunting him for the rest of his career.
Who did he say it to?
That is where the mystery begins. We first heard about the quote, not in 1990, but 5 years later in 1995. It was written in a book by Chicago Tribune beat reporter Sam Smith. It quickly spread throughout the media. It was repeated in books by David Halberstam. It was reported in all the major newspapers, and it was pretty much taken as gospel that he said it.
So you believed then for years that it was true?
There started to be some questions about it because he denied it. And Sam Smith was kind of weaselly about the sourcing on it. We didn't really know what was going on. And frankly, I did not want to believe it. And so for many years, up until pretty recently, when I saw the doc, I said, Michael didn't say that. You know, that's some third-hand quote that was attributed to him because we wanted to believe that he was not putting money over the best interests of the Black community. That was what we really hoped, and we really admired Michael and loved him. You know, he might be one of the most beloved Black athletes of all time. And so that wasn't something that I wanted to believe, and I think a lot of other people felt the same way.
What was your takeaway from how Michael addressed it in the documentary.
I would be willing to give Jordan a pass if he said, well, you know, I was young and maybe didn't think it all the way through. But Jordan really defended it, you know, and that is the part that sort of disappointed me. First of all, he said it was a joke, but we all know, and as Dr. Todd Boyd told me for my story, a lot of truth is said in jest. And Jordan is an extraordinarily intelligent person and has a very cutting and rapier wit that he wields ruthlessly. And this is a great example of him wrapping up some truth in a joke. And so to say it was a joke, it to me felt like a dodge. It also felt like a dodge to me when he said, I never thought of myself as an activist.
I never thought of myself as an activist. I thought of myself as a basketball player. I wasn't a politician when I was playing my sport. You know, I was focused on my craft. Was that selfish? Probably. But that was my energy. That's where my energy was.
Now, we all admire and respect his focus on his craft, which enabled him to do the things he did. However, he had a lot of time to focus on business too. So if he had wanted to focus on social justice, even 5 or 10% of his energy, then that would not have detracted from his business or his basketball exploits.
So Jesse, the quote sent you on a bit of a reporting journey where you went and interviewed the candidate, Harvey Gantt, who was in the Senate race that kicked off this whole thing in North Carolina, just to get his take on actually seeking Jordan's endorsement and him declining it. What did Gantt tell you?
Gantt surprised me. Gantt said, hey, I wasn't really worried about getting Michael Jordan's endorsement. We asked a lot of people to endorse this, and if they did not, that is their right. And Harvey Gantt was very adamant that Michael Jordan had no responsibility in his eyes to support his campaign, which is somewhat different than your average Black citizen probably felt at the time. So Gantt told me he did not hold it against him. He said, we cannot blame Michael Jordan for me losing that Senate race. It's not his fault.
I think the quote also struck people as being plausible because Jordan wasn't outspoken about anything politically at the time, right?
Very much so. And there was probably some denial on my part about when I thought he didn't say it. I didn't want him to say it, but it fit with his whole MO. That was how Jordan got down. Michael very carefully crafted his image. And strategically so.
Who said man was not meant to fly?
Air Jordan.
What's in the bag?
Lunch. Big Mac, fries.
Play you for it. You and me for my Big Mac.
And he had an acute understanding of what I think he could and couldn't get away with at that time. It did seem selfish. And I will give Jordan some points in the doc for copping to that. He said that was where my energy was in basketball. He didn't say his energy was in business, but that's also where his energy was in becoming the Jordan brand.
How did that compare to other prominent Black athletes at the time?
Not favorably, in my opinion. There's this long tradition in the Black community of all of the great, great athletes being advocates for us. You can go back to Jack Johnson, who was the first Black heavyweight champion, and his defiance of white norms and insistence on living his life the way he wanted to. Jackie Robinson was a tremendous champion and very active politically. Jim Brown, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, John Carlos and Tommy Smith, the athletes at the 68 Olympics who stood there with their fists up. Bill Russell, how can I forget Bill Russell? It was sort of like an understanding or a compact that the Black community had with these greats that they were sort of supposed to or expected to use their platform to try to help the oppressed members of our community. I think it's accurate to say that Jordan didn't speak out because he was focused on his commercial interests. Those interests depended on a very wide and mainstream appeal. To be on the cover of a Wheaties box.
Sometimes I dream that heals me.
Nike, Gatorade, McDonald's, Chevrolet, Hanes. I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg. It was unprecedented, the marketing success that this guy had. He was the first of his kind to do it on that level, and this was part of what makes him so great. There were sacrifices to be made in the pursuit of those ends.
Do you think it's true that he would have jeopardized any of that sort of mainstream appeal if he had taken political stances?
I do. And we have to remember that this is the late 80s and the early 90s that we're talking about. It's not after the first black president. Speaking of whom, I found that what President Obama said in the documentary to be very powerful. And I think that Obama, more than anybody, might have an understanding of the tightrope that Jordan had to walk.
America is very quick to embrace a Michael Jordan or an Oprah Winfrey or a Barack Obama, so long as it's understood that you don't get too controversial around broader issues of social justice.
And a lot of people did not understand that, because the way all the previous black athletes had been racial advocates, all the previous black politicians had been racial advocates and had engaged in racial politics. Obama did not. What I took away from his quote in the documentary was, Mike, I understand where you were at. We were in between a rock and a hard place. And in order to get to do the things that we were able to accomplish, we had to avoid talking about race. And when Obama says it, it puts it in a little bit of different light than just sitting back and taking pot shots at Michael Jordan for not endorsing someone in a Senate race.
But it was also a question, a demand, a request that wasn't being put on white athletes at the time.
That's a great point, Mina, because white athletes are never asked to answer for structural racism or discrimination. They're never asked to comment on white police officers who kill unarmed black people. But yet, that is a burden that is put on black athletes. But, you know, like Obama said, that's part of the compact. That's part of the deal. It's a black man's burden. And Jordan dealt with it in his own way, I guess.
Well, after the break, let's dig deeper on this and how his approach to these issues has evolved over the years. Hi, guys. Given everything that is happening in the world right now, most of us are buying things online. I saw that AT&T started doing two really helpful things for those who want to buy a new phone or device online. They are offering fast, free, non-contact delivery and curbside pickup so that online shopping is as simple and safe as possible. On top of that, they have a flexible return policy so you can shop at ease. You can visit att.com to learn how to shop online from the safety of your home 24/7. Subject to change, restrictions apply. Jesse, in reporting on this for The Undefeated, you spoke to people close to Michael. What did they have to say?
Well, Michael's spokeswoman told me some of the same things that Michael said in the documentary about he can never satisfy everybody. Everyone has an idea of what they want him to be. Jordan's agent, David Falk, told me that no matter what Michael did throughout his career, he was always criticized for doing too much or doing too little, or you should have done it this way, you should have done it that way. That does seem like a real thing that Jordan has to deal with that we don't have much idea of as mere mortals. And I thought that the documentary did a really good job of illustrating that. You might remember, after they finished talking about this topic and how he's in a no-win situation, they cut away and Jordan was sitting all by himself in a big training room. And so it sort of emphasized the isolation when the unique position and nobody really being able to empathize with what Michael Jordan is going through. Down here on planet Earth with the rest of us, a lot of us look at, you know, what he did and we're torn over it, and I'm personally torn over it, because I think that he did do a lot of good later in his career and did become more active. But at the same time, we wish that he could have spoken up more at the time. Not that he would have necessarily defeated Jesse Helms or solved world hunger or anything like that, but just because we feel like that's something that's important to us in the black community and it's part of our identity. It's the struggle.
How do you think Jordan regards that?
I think that he's done it his way and he is making more of a difference now. And there's more than one way to pursue Black progress. And frequently, there's been a lot of dissension within the Black community, within those two sides, about what's the best way to do it. Michael chose the economic empowerment method. And so I think that Michael is sitting back as owner of the Charlotte Hornets, as a billionaire, as someone who has impacted a lot of Black lives, and saying, I did it my way and it worked. So fall back or catch this game winner jumper in your face. Coach John Thompson at Georgetown, who is one of the fiercest racial advocates of sports history and who loves Michael Jordan and has defended him vehemently in conversations I've had with him. Coach Thompson liked to say, everyone thinks that these poor Black kids need love. Forget that. They need money. So that's the path that Jordan took.
Jesse, when would you say Jordan's approach to activism and social issues began to change?
You could probably say in 1996, and maybe it was a guilty conscience, but he did donate money to Harvey Gantt's campaign that year, which was his second campaign against Jesse Helms, which he also lost. And then over the years, Jordan started to give to more political causes. He supported Barack Obama from very early on in his political career in Illinois. In the modern era, Jordan's social activism has really picked up. And I think that the turning point would be in 2016, when we were in the midst of the Black Lives Matter movement and unarmed Black people were being killed by police officers. Jordan published a column on The Undefeated in which he said, I can no longer stay silent, which I found to be a profound statement because it implied that he had been silent before. It didn't imply it, it just said it. And he donated $1 million to the NAACP Legal Defense Fund and also to a police organization whose goal is to build better relationships with the community. And one of the most impactful things that Jordan has done is gotten scores of Black executives hired and promoted at many of the different companies that he's involved with, Nike, Jordan Brand. The Charlotte Hornets is full of Black executives that he has empowered there. Jordan gave $5 million as a founding donor of the Smithsonian Museum of African American History. So there's a lot that he has done recently over these past few years.
Jordan is also the only Black owner in the NBA, which, while not a political comment, is political in and of itself, no?
That's a great point, Mina. And it's the same way that having the first Black president is powerful in terms of the example that it sets, not just for Black people, but to make white people just kind of understand, yeah, this is normal. This is how it should be.
There was a moment a couple of years ago when President Donald Trump went after LeBron.
Trump questioned the intelligence of the Los Angeles Lakers star, tweeting, LeBron James was just interviewed by the dumbest man on television, Don Lemon. He made LeBron look smart, which isn't easy to do. I like Mike.
Jesse, everybody was kind of waiting to see, is Michael Jordan actually going to address this?
Yeah, that was a big moment.
Even Michael Jordan defended LeBron through a spokesperson. I support LeBron James. He's doing an amazing job for his community.
Jordan just said, I'm with LJ. For me personally, that's sort of made up for a lot of the other stuff because you're supporting an athlete's right to speak out. You're on the right side of history. It was rather symbolic in a lot of ways because LeBron, when it comes to social justice, is everything that Jordan was not. LeBron has really built his brand on social justice and being a racial advocate very publicly. And LeBron endorsed Hillary Clinton. There is this big contrast that we can look at between the way LeBron handles his business empire and his endorsements in conjunction with his social activism and what Jordan did not do. And I think a lot of younger people would say, well, Michael could have done that too and not lost anything. He was that big, but it was a different time. In a lot of ways, Michael was a product of his time. So I don't think we can necessarily make that assumption that Michael Jordan would have become what he is now if he had been as vocal as LeBron. And even more importantly than that, everything that LeBron can do now was made possible by Michael Jordan. LeBron's economic freedom was won by Jordan, and all the leverage that he has, his global reach. LeBron has a $1 billion lifetime Nike contract. I mean, that allows him to speak out. And these are all things that were created by Michael Jordan through all the fans and the money that he brought to the NBA. I think that in some ways, Jordan kept quiet so LeBron could speak out. And Jordan deserves credit for that.
Do you think that his legacy on that front has changed? I mean, again, this quote, which is where we began with this, right? Republicans buy sneakers too. It's followed him for so many years. Do you think at some point it'll be outweighed by what you're describing, all the things he's done for the community and his sort of modern political involvement?
I don't think it'll be outweighed as long as people are wearing Air Jordans. And we see no end to that anytime soon. I think that this quote is a permanent part of his legacy, especially since he has finally now confessed to actually saying it, joke or not. Like many things that Michael Jordan said, it was intelligent, it was cutting, it held some deeper truths. It means a lot in the history of Black athlete activism in this country. It's very significant. I don't think we should forget it, and I hope that at some point, Jordan embraces it for what it really is.
Thanks so much, Jesse.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Mina.
Coming up, a story of how Jordan and the Bulls left a lasting impact on one family. We're presented by Marathon. Now, more than ever, we have to look out for each other and count on each other. And Marathon wants you to know that you can count on them for high-quality, top-tier gas. While we are aware travel might not be top of mind, there might be times where you have to hop in the car to run an errand. Maybe you have to drop off groceries and supplies to your family. Maybe you've become an amazing baker and want to drop off a few dozen cookies on your best friend's porch. Or maybe you just want to drive around to all of your friends' homes simply to wave from a safe distance. But before you head out, remember to fuel up at Marathon. Marathon gasolines are formulated with STP additives. They keep your vehicle running at peak performance by optimizing fuel economy, removing those ugly deposit buildups, and reducing emissions. Remember, wherever you need to go, the people at Marathon are behind you all the way. Marathon, fueling the American spirit. Here's another story I want you to know. As The Last Dance continues, some of our colleagues at ESPN have been contributing personal stories about how they were affected by watching Jordan and the Bulls. Here's our Justin Tinsley on why that championship season meant more to him than he knew at the time.
My Uncle John Marshall was the reason I fell in love with sports. All sports. Professional and college, men's and women's. A former college football player himself, as long as it involved the competition, he was invested. You see, Uncle John was the closest I've ever experienced to what I surmise a father-son relationship felt like. And spring was always Jordan time for Uncle John and me. We watched all the playoff games, but it was Jordan who brought out the fire in us.
Jordan! Oh! A spectacular move by Michael Jordan!
Most of the time, we couldn't watch it together because he lived in Washington, D.C., and I was in school in Central Virginia. But we talk on the phone while watching the game until it was time for me to go to sleep. In 1998, when I was 12, I got to spend most of that summer in Washington, D.C. with Uncle John. He taught me how to ride the metro and the art of laundromat politics to make sure your clothes, quote, didn't get up and walk away. He explained, delicately, why President Bill Clinton was facing fire.
It depends upon what the meaning of the word is.
And he established my love of seafood with countless trips to the Wharf Fish Market. He loved his job as a bellman at a Washington hotel. He was a people person for sure, and it was perfect for him. Like most kids in the 90s, I worshiped Jordan. I drank Gatorade and ate Wheaties because of Mike. And one time, I purposely moved in the barber's chair so that the barber had to repair the plug in my head by giving me a baldy. Uncle John just laughed at that. By June 14, 1998, the day of Game 6 of the Finals, I was a bundle of nerves. We watched that game together at his apartment in Northeast D.C. I can still see it. The dim light of the floor lamp, the fish tank. Don't worry, I can still hear Uncle John saying, Jordan's got this. The final moments of Game 6 run in my head as if they happened 5 minutes ago.
50 seconds.
John Stockton's three to put the Jazz up 86-83 took the air out of me and I fell on the floor.
Cross court Stockton, a three, it's there!
Jordan's layup out of a timeout cut the lead to one.
Pippen into Jordan. Michael working on Russell. Brings them to within one.
Uncle John was quiet most of the game. Then Jordan dribbled the ball behind the three-point line.
Jordan, open!
It felt like an eternity. Jordan made a hard drive to the free throw line and stopped on a dime, pushing Russell out of the way. All right, was it a foul? Maybe. But when Jordan made that move that led to the shot, my uncle stood up, yelled, and clapped his hands. That's money. Swish. I lost my hearing for a split second and everything and everyone stood still. The next thing I heard was Bob Costa saying, Chicago with the lead. And Chicago won.
The Chicago Bulls have won their sixth NBA championship and it's their second three-peat.
Several months earlier, Uncle John told me about stomach aches he'd been experiencing. He didn't seem too worried, so I didn't think too much of it either. As the year went by, those stomach aches got worse. I think he feared it was cancer, but he never let that fear affect our relationship. By Thanksgiving, Uncle John had been moved to a hospital full time. He had come to peace with death by then. He told me the importance of appreciating life. To be fearless. If I could produce the thought, he said, I could produce the result. I was a young black boy who'd eventually become a young black man. The world would be fearful of that, he said, but I should always be proud of who I am. He made me say, I promise to protect the women I love most in my life. My mom, grandma, aunt, and his two nieces, Kim and Angela. That conversation is the foundation my life is rooted in. And I don't think it's a stretch to say that that conversation was his version of the shot. The last time I saw Uncle John was December 29th, 1998. He was loaded up on morphine and he couldn't speak. I held his cold, sweaty hand, and my aunt Scent told me to ask yes or no questions. Yes, and he'd squeeze my hand twice. Did he know who I was? Two squeezes. Did he know I loved him? Two squeezes. My last words to him were, I love you. Uncle John died of colon cancer on January 2nd, 1999. So soon after we celebrated MJ's last Bulls championship together. Just a few days later, Jordan retired for a second time. I've heard from so many people that The Last Dance brings up memories like mine, of people they love and how that connects to the authoritative narrative of Jordan's life and times. For me, though, it's another chance to remember sitting on that couch with my uncle, living that moment with him one more time.
That was Justin Tinsley. You can check out his writing at theundefeated.com. I'm Mina Kimes. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.